Up Subversity here on KCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds. He says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die. And he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Lobau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me, and brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
Expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station management nor the regents of the University of California, Irvine. Today we're going to take a look at an amazing case that came down yesterday. And this morning, Arthur Carmona, 18, was released after two full years in prison. He spent his 17th and 18th birthday in prison for a crime he did not commit. And yesterday a judge ordered him released, and this morning he was. And this afternoon he was with his family back at home for the first time in over two years for a crime in Irvine, a robbery in Irvine. Did the Irvine PD do something wrong? And did the DA go overboard yesterday when he lectured Arthur Carmona and told him not to commit crimes? And the DA insisted that he was still guilty even though the judge had ordered him release. Was that arrogance or was that what? We're going to explore that with one of the attorneys of Arthur Carmona, Nadia Davis, shortly when we come back. This case has garnered a lot of support among the not only the Latino community, but the larger community in Orange County. Dana Parsons in the LA Times wrote almost a dozen columns about this case, and the OC Weekly covered it also, with even a benefit concert with lots of bands playing a few weeks ago to raise money. And even Rage Against the Machine also lent its support for this teenager who was innocent and spent a couple of years in a harsh prison, a state prison, for a crime he did not commit. And this is just the latest in a series of goof-ups by the district attorney's office. This year has seen the release of a few other people who were incarcerated on the basis of very little evidence, of flimsy evidence. And that raises a question that even Dana Parsons himself, a Times correspondent, a Times columnist raises, is are there other innocent people in the system that are now languishing, unknown, unrecognized by the rest of us? So we're going to find out what it feels like to talk to Arthur Kimona today after he spent a couple of years, but he never gave up hope. He knew that he would be vindicated, and he had a lot of supporters. There's a website, www.freekimona.org, that you can check out if you want more information about his case. And you can also go to ocweekly.com and search under Kimona, and it would bring back dozens of articles, lots of articles about this case of this teenager who was just walking down the street in Irvine when the police pulled him over. And one of the more interesting and outrageous things that the police did was they put a cap on him, the cap that was used in the robbery, even though Kimona did not wear a cap, and they put this cap on him to make him look more like the suspect, look more like the accused robber. And that was one of the evidence, pieces of evidence, that seemed to have been manufactured in this case. The case unraveled when witnesses reconsidered their testimony, and jurors were contacted and said that they would not have convicted if they had known certain facts. So this is a warning, I think, to the rest of us who take the criminal justice system very glibly and think that justice is always there. Justice is hard to find sometimes in this world, and there is a lot of corruption, and there's a lot of injustice, as we found last week with the police abuse in Los Angeles. There was a lot of abuse going on in LAPD with how they treated protesters, even though the mainstream media has been almost uniform in its praise of how the police acted this past week in Los Angeles. And a case in point, the people who drove their bicycles and crossed the intersection against the red light on the orders of the police were rounded up and put in prison for over a day, put in jail, and then arrested and charged with disorderly conduct or whatever, for following basically a policeman's order. And those people were told that they could be released if they promised never to ride bikes again. What kind of justice is that? We're going to try to reach our guest today and bring her on board, and you can have a chance to talk with her. If you want to call her, you can call this number, 949-824-5824. This is Dan Zhang with Subversity, a KUCI public affairs interview program that airs weekly at this time. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will talk with Nadia Davis, one of the attorneys for Arthur Kimona, 18, who was released this morning.
someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's good news week. Someone's found a way to give the rotting dead a will to live, go on and never die. Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won that race? What's the weather like today? It's good news week. Lots of blood in Asia now. They butchered off the sacred cow. They've got a lot to eat. It's good news week. Doctors finding many ways of wrapping brains and metal trays to keep us from the heat. Contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's good news week. Someone found a way to give the rotting dead a will to live, go on and never die. Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won that race? What's the weather like today?
What's the weather like today?
It's good news week. Lots of blood in Asia now. Sacred cow, they've got a lot to eat. It's good news week. Doctors finding many ways of wrapping brains and metal trays to keep us from the heat. To keep us from the heat. To keep us from the heat.
You're listening to Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're going to momentarily bring you the interview with Nadia Davis from the Carmona defense team. In the decision yesterday, Judge Everett Dickey, Orange County judge, who threw out the conviction of this Costa Mesa resident, ruled that prosecutors erred in the case, and that but then he also argued that a Times columnist that was actually the DA argued that a Times columnist he claimed that this Times columnist put pressure on the witnesses, and that was Tony Rakakis, the DA, who made that claim, claiming that Tony Parsons, the columnist for the LA Times, had pressured witnesses for and led them to recant their testimony in the reports that were published in the LA Times. So what do you think of that accusation? Yesterday, the judge also lectured Carmona in court and told him that he should not commit crimes. But who did commit the crime here? And who really is at fault? And Dana Parsons, sorry, his name is Dana Parsons, in a column in today's paper in the LA Times, said that he's now revealing that there's a following anecdote that he kept quiet until the conviction was overturned, which it was yesterday. And there was a pastor who knew Arthur Carmona. And the anecdote, as the pastor, Ken Wilson, a Fullerton pastor, relayed it to him in 1999, was that during one of this pastor's many sessions with Carmona prior to his sentencing, he had told this minister had told the teenager that he had good news. Wilson told him an allegation of possible juror misconduct in Carmona's October 1998 trial had come to light, and he told Carmona that that meant possibly a new trial on a technicality, and on this technicality, and that fizzled. But then Wilson said he was impressed. This minister's pastor said he was impressed by Arthur's reaction. When I told him there might be grounds for a mistrial, he wasn't happy, Wilson reported to Parsons. He said he didn't want to get out on a technicality. If he was going to get out, he wanted it to be legitimate. So he had faith, Arthur Carmona had faith, that he would be released. Let's take another break, and we'll be back soon.
Box is bare, keep the ribs, show your stomach you care. Eat the ribs, pull the rich ass with power of ricochet, swelling out the lung and walking on food to play. And I'm tired of living in life, best of the day. Eat the ribs, young, young, yeah. Eat the ribs. Yum, yum, yeah. Chemicals in your food. Eat the ribs.
Yum, yum, yeah.
Now don't you think that that's rude? Stop. Eat the ribs.
Yum, yum, yeah.
Oh, the bitch has the power of a bag to shame. Spreading out the love and love we know who's to blame. And I'm tired of living in life. Best of the game. Eat the ribs. Yum, yum, yeah, eat the ribs.
Yum, yum,
yum, yum, yeah. You got the poverty blues.
got nothing to lose, so go on, eat the rich.
Yum, yum, yeah.
Go the rich has the power, I think it's a shame. We're spreading out the problem, but we know who's doing it. And I'm tired of living the life, best to the game. Eat the rich.
Yum, yum,
yum, yum, yeah. Eat the rich.
Yum, yum,
yum, yum. This is the part of the song I like a lot. Get to look at the menu. Sure looks delicious. Makes my mouth just water. Says here that melons are always in season. They got kitties and meatballs. Meatballs.
Kitties and meatballs.
Some folks, they like oysters like a fella.
It's a little crazy.
With us on the phone is Nadia Davis, who's one of the lawyers who's been on the winning team in this Arthur Camoni case. How did he feel when he got out?
Overjoyed that all the hard work over 2 years was finally worth it, you know. But when we were in the courtroom and heard the news, it was not until he actually walked out of the jail today with normal clothes on, without handcuffs on, and he hugged his mom and just walked out freely that it really hit us. And then today, seeing him with his family eating carnitas and laughing and smiling was just beautiful to see.
So he got out of OC jail instead of the prison. He didn't have to go back to the prison.
Right. No, we yes. They were going to transfer him back to Ironwood last night and or this morning, and actually Senator Dunn's office read the news this morning and helped out quite a bit.
That's great.
Yes.
Why did you sign the agreement not to sue?
Well, it was no one's decision but Arthur's decision. You know, all of us cannot imagine what he's gone through, and having his freedom being offered to him, being you know, hung right in front of his eyes, you know, in exchange for signing this document. No one can ever imagine what he's gone through and how much he wanted to get out. You know, that's the only thing that I can say about why he agreed to it. I mean, it's been 2.5 years. He's been threatened. He's gone through hell, and he wanted out, you know. And also, you know, throughout this process, nothing has been a given. Everything has been a roll of dice, and, you know, you would hope that legalities would be more constant and that justice, you know, blatant innocence would cry out to the court system and that justice could easily prevail. But this was the first time in over 2 years that he was being offered something that was a given, that was a sure thing. Your freedom, you know, nothing on your record. This will be completely expunged, and basically it's as though he was in a time warp.
He was tried as an adult.
Yes.
And do you see the Irvine police as having acted in like a racial profiling situation? Or?
Do I see who?
Irvine police. When he was arrested.
It was Irvine and Costa Mesa police.
Oh.
Well, yeah. I mean, the description was a young Latino male, shaved head, dark clothes. Well, that's 98% of the kids in the school district that I represent, which is one of the reasons why I was so committed to helping Arthur. It is racial profiling, you know.
Yeah.
Because he fit a general description, they assumed that he was a robber.
And you have faith now that justice will prevail, or are there other? There must be other cases of innocent people in there, huh?
Absolutely. I think that we really need to analyze eyewitness identifications, convictions based solely on eyewitness identifications. There needs to be an entire analysis of that nationally, which is starting to happen, but in our county, it really we were stalling in that, and hopefully. I mean, you know, I pray to God that things will slowly start to change in this county. And I was very happy to hear Arthur say today that he just wants to start college right away, and he's even thinking of studying law. So I was very happy to hear that.
Did he finish high school in jail then, or how did that?
He finished all of his units, but five units. You know, he was arrested as a sophomore, and he worked very diligently and to get a number of units up till five units shy of his high school diploma. So we are working at getting his high school diploma right now, but he is planning on starting school at Santa Ana College. So.
Wow. How about in terms of the support? You know, the OC Weekly did a whole benefit, musical benefit, lots of bands played, a lot of punk rockers showed up, and other people supported him. There's a website, freekimono.org.
Right.
How much of this do you credit to the support?
You know, I credit all of it. That was what enabled Ronnie and I to bring in Mark DeVore, that's what got, caught Dana Parsons' attention.
That's the law firm. And the LA law firm.
What?
That's the LA law firm, Mark DeVore.
Mark DeVore came in to help me on the motion for a new trial.
Oh, I see.
But ultimately, okay, after we lost the motion for a new trial, it was his community from the church that he goes to that helped to bring in Sidley and Austin. It was one of his the parishioners from Seeker's Chapel in Costa Mesa. Her sister is an attorney, Deborah Munns Park, who wrote the habeas petition and the appeal, who works for Sidley and Austin.
Oh, I see.
So it was the community support and belief in him and his innocence and people that know the kind of wonderful, gentle young man that he is that ultimately brought us from, you know, Ronnie and my novice hands to this huge, prestigious law firm and, you know, him being given his innocence yesterday.
Do you regret that you can't sue the, you know, authorities now?
There's other ways to hold them accountable.
What do you mean?
Well, we need to inform the public and educate the public so that this doesn't happen again, and to hold, you know, our officials accountable.
So you're going to...
A check, you know, no money, no amount of money would ever give him back what he lost.
That's true.
It would have simply been a check. And, you know, there's other ways for Arthur to get some type of you know, redemption or personally, whatever will give him his personal peace is not through that route. And there's other avenues, there's other ways to go about doing that.
He had faith, that he would get out, you think? Or was he optimistic or what?
We were very optimistic with Sidley and Austin and their, you know, the caliber of that firm and the endless hours that they had put in and prepared to the case. We were ready on Monday morning for, you know, a 7-day evidentiary hearing, and we're very confident that we would have been granted a new trial. You know, it would have been another, you know, who knows, 6 months to a year of going through waiting for a new trial. Even if we had been granted a new trial, you know, it would have been a long process, and none of that was a given that he was offered, you know, yesterday morning.
You know, this police tactic of putting hats on people, I covered a case for OC Weekly in which the Garden Grove police put a cap on a Vietnamese guy to make him look like a suspect. And I see in the paper that the Irvine police thought that was a good tactic, that they would do it again.
You know, that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
I mean, because when they placed that hat on Arthur, that tainted some factual proof of his innocence.
Mm-hmm.
Factual proof, someone else's hair, someone else's DNA, that could have proven that he's factually innocent. You know, now it's very, 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 very frightening that they are saying that they wouldn't stop doing that.
Do you think this...
That means, you know, that they could basically place a gun in your hand for some robbery that happened, you know, miles away. They can stop you and place a gun in your hand.
It's like a prop, and they could create, manufacture evidence, almost.
Exactly.
How about this thing, are they going to go after Larry Agron, you think? I mean, for writing a letter of support? Is that really a crime for a lawyer to write a letter? Oh, he didn't write it as a lawyer.
No, I don't think that it's a crime at all, and he wrote it in his capacity as a city council member trying to hold his police department accountable. He didn't write it as an attorney in that capacity. And Judge Dickey made the comment that he was going to report him because he's an attorney. But, you know, you know, our elected officials and the media was really truly what helped to get the truth out in this matter, because the court system wasn't working.
How about the DA's comments? What do you think of that?
I thought it was extremely disrespectful and insensitive to, you know, a young man who was stolen the most important 2 years of his teenage life, for him to say that.
He assumed.
And you know what? Basically, the trial, the trial is completely erased. There was never a trial before. His record is completely expunged. So for him to refer, stating that he believes, you know, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't think Arthur is innocent. A jury convicted him, a judge convicted him, is completely inappropriate, because when we left that courtroom on Monday, that trial never happened. Any reference to it, I mean, it was all a complete mistake, and he was put through a trial because of a great injustice. So for the district attorney to say that was very inappropriate.
So whose fault was it then, this whole mistake, a series of mistakes? You think it's the system let him down, or the individual people?
It's a series of mistakes from the point in which he was arrested to the hat, to, you know, the series of inadequacies from his attorney, from failing to call all the alibi witnesses, to failing to subpoena phone records, to his, you know, what he didn't present in the courtroom, to what the prosecutor did, you know, statements she said to witnesses to influence them. It was a series of very disheartening misgivings that caused Arthur Carmona to be wrongfully held behind bars. It wasn't just one thing. It was a whole, you know, set of things that went wrong.
And the family was always behind him, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the sad thing is that it comes down to money here, you know.
Yeah.
Without the level of community support that he received and this highly prestigious law firm coming in, I don't know how far we could have gone. I, you know, it would have still just been Ronnie and I, and we would have fought, we would have continued to fight, but to have a firm, you know, with six attorneys on the case and investigators is, unfortunately, not everyone can afford that.
You know, you're on the school board, the Santa Ana school board, right?
Right. I actually have to go to a board meeting right now. So.
Okay. But right before you go, is there anything you can do at the school board level to, like, make sure this kind of mistaken identification?
Well, actually, I'm very, very happy to say that there's been a number of teachers, not just in this school district, but all over the county, that have used this as an example in their classroom lessons.
Oh, good.
To educate the students about being aware of their rights and about, you know, just informing their students, and that's the first thing that can be done, again, is a public awareness, and to inform our youth that there's people out there that won't allow this to happen. You know, we want to help, we want to increase respect for our police department and for the district attorney's office, and the only way to do that is to let youth know that we will make a distinguishment between the guilty and the innocent, and when someone is innocent, have the guts and the humility to admit that and to right the wrong. And we want them to know that we'll do that. And so it's just getting the word out to those youth and educating the parents and, you know, making sure that youth have opportunities to stay in school and go to college.
And it's a great object lesson for, for its kids. Yeah,
right.
In Santa Ana. Okay, thank you.
It's wonderful how many youth are there supporting Arthur.
All right,
it's wonderful.
That's great to hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That was Nadia Davis, who was one of the attorneys working really, really hard to help this 16-year-old when he was 16, and then he's now 18 and spent 2.5 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. And that's only the latest in a string of guilty and convicted and then proved innocent later. Lots of people have wasted their lives in prison. And this prison industrial complex, that is the edifice of this new society and this new millennium. You're listening to Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Stay tuned. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station management, nor the regents of the University of California. Listening to Sophisticity here on KCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Yesterday, the yellow school bus came into town, and this was the yellow school bus of Medea Benjamin, who's running for Senate, the California seats of Dianne Feinstein. And she rode into Santa Ana and had an impromptu press conference outside this edifice of the criminal justice system, the spanky new Santa Ana Jail, and speaking were a number of other people that were supporting her and also supporting the cause of trying to make the criminal justice system a just system and not an unjust system. So we'll bring you this press conference from the steps of the Santa Ana Jail yesterday. See if that works. Yeah.
Green or Dwayne McKinney in the making, as far as the growing number of innocent people who are incarcerated in prison. And PACS is an organization that tries to prevent things like that from happening and trying to free people who are basically convicted of nonviolent crimes, who mostly need help for drug problems, or people who are just completely innocent and have no business being locked up to begin with. Thank you.
That was a member of FACS, the Families Against Three Strikes, who was speaking at the press conference from Medea Benjamin.
Hi, my name's Dwight Smith. I'm with the Catholic Worker here in Santa Ana, and I'd like my friend Matt from the Jesuit Volunteer Corps to step forward so that I can use these Amnesty International posters as cue cards. Tell from the first poster that we execute mentally retarded people. Come over this way, Matt. We execute mentally retarded people. We execute mentally ill people. And increasingly of late, we've been executing innocent people. Even Republican governors have called for a moratorium on the death penalty, primarily because they don't want to execute any innocent people. But the other reason they're doing that is because the death penalty is irreversible. And that's one of the really bad things about it. Irreversible things require infallible logic, and we can't manage that. The very demonstrations at Staples Center prove that our political process, right, is contentious and flawed on both sides. Our judicial process is also contentious and flawed. We cannot exact an ultimate penalty when we have not accessed an ultimate justice. Turn to the next one. With the passage of Proposition 21, California began to schedule or to plan the execution of children. Children as young as, I think, 14 can commit crimes and be scheduled for a trial and execution as adults. That was a milestone in California jurisprudence because it probably got the greatest section of the popular vote. I've been speaking against the death penalty in Orange County now for about 3 years, and I'm stymied. I speak as a religious person, a chaplain. I speak as a member of Amnesty and a member of a death penalty focus of Orange County. I talk to hundreds of people, and the thing I can never get over is their appetite for executions. I even feel it sometimes. When somebody gets on the wrong side of me, I'd like to see them executed. We have intrinsically in our humanity this vengeful appetite and a desire to have someone tell us that we're innocent. We just can't get enough of that. Cop shows, all those kind of cultural events tell us that we're innocent. And one of the most powerful things a politician can do, flip to the next one, is tell us how innocent we are. It's an incredible way to get elected, but it's absolutely terribly unsophisticated. You can't point to a crowd and go, you people are innocent, so you should vote for me. So what we need, what we've always needed, is a scapegoat. Somebody who can be really, really guilty. Somebody who can be so guilty, we can actually convince people that they can, you know, transubstantiate through prison walls. They can get out and kill us again. They must be through 50 or 60 fences, 4,000 prison guards, but they're going to get out, they're going to trick a judge, they're going to get on parole, they're going to kill another McGuire or a Megan, another Polly Kloss, they're going to kill somebody. And they're so dangerous, even though they're locked behind our multi-billion-dollar prison edifice, that we have to execute them because we don't intrinsically trust our multi-billion-dollar prison edifice. And we're right not to trust it because our logic is flawed, our prisons are flawed, our jurisprudence is flawed, and we cannot exact this ultimate penalty because we're not ultimate people and we're not innocent. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Good morning, I'm Medea Benjamin, running for U.S. Senate on the Green Party ticket. It's sad to go up to see this spanking new jail here that was used with diverting $13.4 million of HUD money that should have gone to provide low-income housing and facilities for the homeless, and instead went to this $107 million jail. This is unfortunately indicative of what is happening all over the country, where we are now spending $21 billion just on construction and maintenance of jails and prison in this country. Here in California, we are spending over $6 billion on the prisons and the jails. This is to keep over 2 million people incarcerated in this country, the highest not only of any country in the world, but 5 times more than any European country, 14 times more than in Japan, and this is per capita. Something has gone awry in this country when we are incarcerating one out of every 147 people. And it is an extremely racist system because when you look at what it is doing to the black community, we are incarcerating one out of 14 black men. This is at a time when the rate of violent crime is going down, has been going down every year since 1991. By 20% it has gone down, while the rate of incarceration has gone up by 50%. So what is fueling this prison industrial complex? Unfortunately, it comes from several sources. One of them is politicians who still continue to try to get votes by showing how tough they are in crime. And this is certainly true of the incumbent Senator Dianne Feinstein, who I'm running against. And it is true that politicians continue to increase their fiefdoms by having more and more prisons under their control. It has become a source of economic development for impoverished communities in the state that haven't experienced the economic boom, particularly rural areas of the state where prisons are the main source of income. And perhaps most perverse of all is that prisons in this country have become a source of money for private enterprise. It has become big business. This is not only in the building of new prisons, the multi-billion dollar business of building new prisons, but is also the increasing use of prison labor as a source of income. As Greens, we speak out against the privatization of prisons. We think it is extremely immoral for anybody to be making money from incarceration. We also think it is extremely immoral that we are paying prison guards more than we pay high school teachers, more than we pay even for incoming college professors. Shows some real moral distortions in our society. So as Greens, what do we call for? We certainly are in favor of alternatives to incarceration, such as Proposition 36 that calls for treatment for first and second nonviolent drug offenders instead of incarceration. We call for repeal of three strikes and for an end to mandatory minimum sentences. We also call for repeal of Proposition 21, which was treating our youth as adults when it comes to the criminal justice system, one of the most vengeful propositions we have ever passed in the state. We call for an end to the death penalty, a very barbaric way of the state telling that it doesn't like killing. We are one of the only Western societies in the world right now that continues to use the death penalty. 108 other countries have either abolished it in law or in practice. And we also call for a reconfiguration of how we use our tax dollars. Right now, the vast majority of our tax dollars are spent on fueling the Pentagon, over $300 billion, and on this military criminal system gone awry. We say, let's put our tax dollars into things that actually give people hope and a chance, and are the best things that we can do to cut down on crime. Let's put the money that was diverted to produce this banking county jail and put it back where it belongs, into money for homeless and low-income housing. Let's put money into the educational system that is falling apart here in California, where we used to have one of the best educational systems, not only in the country, but in the world. And certainly, let's put it into healthcare and provide all people in this country and all people in the state access to healthcare, which we think is a human right. So we call on a change of priorities. Let's get businesses out of the business of the prison system. Let's put money into basic needs, and we will continue to see, as we have since 1991, a fall in the crime rate. Thank you.
You're listening to the press conference I put on to support Medea Benjamin yesterday at Santa Ana, outside Santa Ana's jail.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Amin David. I'm here on a beautiful day, calling attention to the fact that Hispanic Magazine named Santa Ana one of the best cities to which to live in. And is that the reason why we take the time and effort to help Santa Ana straighten out its moral decay, in the sense that, and she alluded to that, CDBG monies were used to construct this Taj Mahal, which is a jail, of all things. CDBG monies are destined to help the low and moderate income people get housing. Not only that, they diverted that money, there's helicopters that bear the name CDBG monies. And so consequently, we're here to help Santa Ana recognize these incredible meandering methods by which things like this happen, and call attention to it. Ladies and gentlemen, I am a Democrat. All right. But since the issues that have been placed on the table by Medea draw me to that thinking, I want to tell you that many of us are of that kind of thinking now, where we have to wipe the slate clean and come to realization that nothing's going to happen, I think, with these two powerful parties. We have to be thinking very cautiously about that. And so consequently, we're here and drawn to the wisdom that Medea Benjamin brings to our table and really do some soul searching about it. What I've mentioned here about Santa Ana is just a drop in the bucket. We're very concerned about the non-availability of low and moderate income. Disneyland is getting ready to open its second gate. What they have failed to consider is, where are the thousands of workers going to live? There's no more room in Moreno Valley. There's no more room in our places in Santa Ana. We're already living two and three people in an apartment. So what's going to happen? How did these approvals come about? And so Medea is asking these questions, and they're placing them right in front of us, those of us. We recognize that perhaps changes cannot be instituted tomorrow, but in the long run, they may be. And we begin with a long, long step forward to do so. So I bid you good morning, and we'll be here to answer questions. Who's next?
We're going to now open it open to any questions from the press or from the audience. We're going to try and keep it brief to about 15 minutes. Thank you.
This is Sam Wilson here on KUCI. You're listening to the press conference for Medea Benjamin yesterday at 7.
David, are you saying that other than the two normal traditional parties, are you going to consider the gay party as a viable alternative?
It is an excellent alternative to the perplexing question that faces us with these two parties. They're both funneled and energized by the pacts of these self-interest groups. And so consequently, we have to face that situation. And yes, indeed, the thought is very much present in our mind.
Get
you into the debates.
Well, so there's two questions on the debates. One is on the presidential level, one is on the Senate level. In the Senate level, we have been invited by a number of organizations throughout the country, throughout the state. Both we have right here Chapman College, we have University Synagogue in Los Angeles, we have a number of colleges throughout the state that have asked Dianne Feinstein, myself, Tom Campbell to join in debates. Tom Campbell has agreed to many of them. I certainly have agreed, and we are waiting to get Dianne Feinstein's word on whether she will debate or not. We have a lot of people calling her office, writing her office, faxing her office, writing letters to the editor, calling on her to debate, so we encourage you all to do the same. I think it really is only public pressure that will force her to debate, because unlike the presidential level, there are no set debates. There don't have to be any, which is quite a slap in the face, I think, to the voters in California, that those who are running for office don't have to get out and talk about the issues in front of the public. So I think it really is only through public pressure that we will force Dianne Feinstein. On the positive note, we saw an article that was in the Los Angeles Times just a couple of days ago where she did mention that she would participate in debate. So we shall see. On the presidential level, for those who don't know, it is a totally rigged system where the Commission on Presidential Debates is actually formed by the Republicans and Democrats themselves, who set the rules in their own interests. And to keep out third-party candidates, they have arbitrarily set the figure of 15% for the minimum you need in the polls to get in the debates, while to get federal funding, you only need 5%. So we Greens are saying it doesn't make any sense. Ralph Nader already is polling over 5% nationwide, which means he should definitely be in the debates. And there are literally thousands of letters, faxes, and calls that are going into the Commission on Presidential Debates every single week saying, you know, we demand that Nader be included in the debates, and we encourage people to keep those letters coming. Questions?
What were your impressions of last week's BGKLA
Well, given that we are here in front of a jail, I think first I'll start by saying that I think there was a extremely undue and very overly aggressive police force during the demonstrations that actually created a climate of tension and bitterness that didn't have to be there. The police on the Sunday evening Rage Against the Machine concert acted in such a brutal manner that when they gave the crowd 15 minutes to disperse, which was certainly not enough time, and then went in shooting foam bullets, rubber bullets, pepper spray at a crowd that was trying to get out, and giving them no exit, actually, because I was there, my daughter was there, got hurt in the melee. We denounce the what the police did starting on Monday afternoon, and feel that throughout the week there was this extremely tense situation created by the aggression on the part of the police. I also think that it could have been avoided when you look at who was arrested. For example, the people in critical mass who were riding their bicycles and were arrested when they went through a red light with the police escort, the police telling them to go through that red light. They were actually cornered by the police and then arrested on absolutely false grounds. That was an example of the kind of police abuse that was suffered during the week. There were many occasions on which the police did actually work with the organizers of the demonstrations to defuse the situation, and I think it showed that had the police worked with the organizers of the demonstrations throughout the week, we wouldn't have had the problems that we saw. I also think in the larger context that the week was a great example of many people looking at the two parties in a new light and really recognizing that the Democrats and the Republicans have become so sold out to the corporations that it's hard to think of the system as a democracy anymore. And that the kind of protest that happened both in Philadelphia, where I was, and Los Angeles, whether it was the protests in the street, the kind of discussions that went on in the shadow convention that addressed very key issues like the war on drugs, inequalities, and campaign finance reform, and the number of media who were covering those venues, I think we did manage to get out to millions of Americans, our discontent with politics as it is right now in the United States, and pose alternatives such as the ones the Greens have been posing, which is full public financing of campaign, get big money out of politics, turn the system around to one that focuses on human needs rather than corporate greed.
As a mother of two teenagers, I'm really concerned about the way our society points the finger at youth for its problems. Dwight mentioned being a scapegoat. Prop 21, like you said, is one of the most vicious acts that we have passed as a society against our children. What do you and the Greens have planned to reverse that process and to give our kids the support that they need?
So it was interesting going last night to Cruz Cafe and seeing lots and lots of local youth having a place to gather, which is so unusual in the society because we make it very difficult for youth to have a place where they can get together, enjoy music, and I think that, certainly one thing we do is need to have more community spaces where that youth can use. If you travel to other countries, you find that there are many of those such spaces in every single city, for example, in Europe. And you have much less crime as a result because young people have a place to gather. It's also interesting, I saw recently a study that was done by the California Law Enforcement Association on juvenile crime. And do you know what they said was the most important thing that they had learned in order to reduce juvenile crime? They said put money into daycare. Something that might be obvious to us as mothers, but it was interesting to see it come out from a law enforcement agency. Certainly, if you want to give a youth a sense that you respect them, you have to give them the kind of educational system that trains them for jobs in this society that make them feel like they have a future. And I think, unfortunately, I talked about our California school system really falling apart, and the two-tiered system we have, which will only get worse with the voucher program, that we have to really rebuild our educational system so we are providing the education for the $100,000 a year jobs that are being created in Silicon Valley, that we have to import workers from India and Pakistan and other countries because our school system isn't teaching people the skills they need to take those jobs. And I agree that Proposition 21 is disastrous, not only for what it will do for the individuals who get caught up into that system, but for what it says to young people about how we as a society feel towards them. And I think, again, Dianne Feinstein is one of the villains in this because she has used this anti-gang hysteria as a way to further her political career. And I think that too many politicians have done this. Again, not only is crime going down, but so is gang violence going down. I guess I would just sum it up to say that we as a society have to show that our priorities are for those in the society that are both the youth, the elderly, people who have disabilities, people who have extreme health problems. Those are the most vulnerable people in the society, and you judge a society by how it treats its most vulnerable population.
This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. You're listening to Subversity here on KUCI. We're going to continue one more question at this press conference of Medea Benjamin.
Yeah. In Orange County, the police have been taking pictures of young people for gang files. If you are elected, what would you do to us? Would you stop that practice? Or would you try to pass a law to ban photographing of young people?
Certainly, I think it is wrong to photograph young people, and it gives the impression that we think every young person is a criminal or a potential criminal. Just like we saw on the streets of Los Angeles this week, when the police were going around filming us as we were walking in peaceful protests, this criminalization of youth, criminalization of peaceful protesters, is something that we as the Green Party are certainly against, and would do everything within our power as people in government and outside government to stop it from happening. Good morning, my name is Vanji Oberschleck, and I'm a Green here in Orange County.
My name is Tong, and I'm a Green in Orange County also.
We wanted to let everyone here know that if you're interested in participating in Green Party politics and the campaign of Ralph Nader and Medea Benjamin, to come every Thursday night.
We're here at the Catholic Worker in Santa Ana.
At 7 o'clock, every Thursday. It's 316 Cypress. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.
That was a press conference given by Medea Benjamin, who's running for the Green Party candidate. Medea is the head of Global Exchange and was instrumental in the Seattle WTO protests. She rode in on her yellow school bus yesterday, and the school bus was emblazoned with "Don't Jail Kids," big sign there, and parked it right in front of this edifice of the criminal justice system in Santa Ana, the new spanky new Santa Ana jail. So that was Medea Benjamin with Amin David from Los Amigos saying that he's basically switching from being a Democrat to a Green. Isn't that surprising? So this is Dan Zhang coming up, High Visibility with Dai Chapman. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Dan Zhang hosts. Listen to Alternative News on Friday for another update at 5 o'clock.